Are you ready for another birth story? Before we begin, I just want to give you a little heads up that Alicia is going to share her experience with having gestational diabetes during her pregnancy and what that diagnosis was like and working with a nutritionist and needing to restrict some foods that was triggering with someone who has struggled with diet culture. So we do talk about that briefly, and we discussed nutrition and what it felt like to restrict. So I just want to put that out there if that might be triggering for anyone. But if you're ready, here we go. Hi, friends, and welcome to the Plus Mommy podcast. I'm your host, Jen McClellan, and here we explore plus-size pregnancy, motherhood, and body love. From bumps to bellies, we talk about it all. Now, let's get started. Hi, friends. Today, we are joined by Alicia Wiest, and I am so excited to hear her birth story. In her words, a very empowering hospital birth following having gestational diabetes during her pregnancy, and she worked hard to balance diet culture with food restrictions and experiencing gestational diabetes. And I'm really excited to hear her whole journey because I think this is something that so many people can relate to. So welcome to the show.
Hi, Jen. Thank you so much for having me. It's an honor to be here.
Oh, I'm so excited to connect. And you might also know Alicia as Plus Size in Seattle over on Instagram. And you show great fashion from a size 18. So it's neat to see, you know, you living your best life, looking absolutely adorable and fashionable. And you're a photographer too. So we'll talk more about that as well at the end of the show. But it's always fun to connect with someone who I follow over on Instagram as well.
I know. Thank you so much. I feel like I already know you just from the world of Instagram. But that's kind of the magic behind it, I think, sometimes.
Right. I think we focus so often on all the, you know, hard aspects of social media. And then we're like, but we get to make internet connections and friends with other moms and other people experiencing life in larger bodies where we can share in those lived experiences and be like, hey, you look amazing. Maybe I'll try that outfit or try purple pants instead of black. And like, you know, it's fun to kind of meet and connect in ways that we wouldn't normally. So I love it too. Well, let's start with your story. I'd love to dive in. Were you trying to get pregnant? Was it a surprise?
Yeah, that's a perfect place to start. So my husband, Doug, and I definitely started that process by not really what, you know, we were just going to see what happens. I was going to go off birth control. But I think as soon as you decide that you're ready to have kids, it like, I wish I would have been pregnant a month before that. So of course, when we finally started thinking about growing our family, we were really anxious and excited to get that started. And during that time, I was going through learning more about my cycle and having some bleeding that came up after I went off of birth control, and through that process learned that I had PCOS. And so I think that just kind of builds the foundation for my pregnancy or my birth story, because it was really confusing and hard to navigate the medical system just from that pre-pregnancy and planning stage. And I think that was really challenging. And the first signal to me that I didn't really understand how to navigate the healthcare system and that there was a level of advocacy that I was going to need to drive myself in order to seek out answers or take next steps.
Wow. When you were, you know, in that puberty stage of your life, were there any signs or were there any things that might have led you to believe earlier on that you might have had PCOS, which is polycystic ovarian syndrome?
Yeah, that's a great question. I didn't know anything about PCOS until it became tossed out as a possibility from a doctor that I was seeing. And then once I learned about what it was, it really started to make sense that it was something I was probably dealing with and had signs of since puberty. So I've like hair growth on my face, a hair loss, just kind of patchy hair issues, I think in general can be a sign. Yeah. But then also having really heavy, almost debilitating periods and inconsistent periods throughout my late teens and 20s before I went on birth control is also a pretty, that can be an indicator of PCOS and inconsistent or just not having periods at all. I think that there was then a few years where a lot of things were masked by possibly taking birth control and just adjusting my hormones. I learned that birth control can sometimes be, treatment for PCOS symptoms. And it made a lot of sense then why I was all of a sudden experiencing these things after I went off birth control and while we were trying to get pregnant.
Mass, that was the word in my head that you said. It really masked those symptoms. And I think so often people are told, and we hear these stories on the show too, and online and, you know, Facebook groups and forums, like, oh, just go, I was put on birth control at a young age, or I was put on birth control, for so long that when I got off of it and I wanted to start a family, all of a sudden, you know, my periods were irregular, or I couldn't track my ovulation. And so I hope that as we talk about PCOS more as a society and raise more awareness, the medical community invests more time, money, and resources into studying PCOS instead of just masking things for people and not even informing them on different things that they can do to help their overall wellness. We know PCOS can be connected with infertility, inflammation, hair loss. As you said, there are so many different things. And so often people are told, here, just go on this birth control. And then, yes, things are masked and better quality of life for many. But then when you want to start a family, I can only imagine how that made you feel, like, wait, what is this? What is happening to me? I'm glad that you got some answers. How long did it take for you to get that diagnosis?
Well, I think I don't know if I actually ever had a firm diagnosis. And I think that's a really important part of the story, because I felt like there were appointments where I was told I could possibly have PCOS. I was showing, you know, three of the four signs, and they had metrics and ways to evaluate they were evaluating what they needed to base their diagnosis on. And I felt like I never received a definitive answer until I sought out a second opinion from an OB at a different hospital system. And that was an appointment I made myself based off of a recommendation from a friend who had been going through some fertility journey on her own. And so I pivoted and I tried to start seeking out answers on my own. And when I saw this other OB, she looked at the information that had been in my medical record, and she told me informally, oh, you definitely have PCOS. I think I had had an internal ultrasound that I had, and that can be really difficult. And I'm, you know, super privileged that I had insurance to cover all of these appointments in the first place.
Yeah.
Which is a whole separate conversation. But when I felt like she was the first person who really sat and looked at my information, told me I had PCOS for sure. She'd seen it all the time. She's almost like a, you know, as a fertility specialist in her clinic. But she frankly told me she didn't have enough time to oversee patients with PCOS on a fertility journey, and that I wouldn't be able to continue that path with their hospital system, and that I should seek out specifically
yet another person,
a fertility specialist. And honestly, I don't even know it that. Oh, and my favorite part was that her other recommendation was to lose 10% of my body weight.
Right. So, and which we can unpack weight and all that too, but also what doesn't get talked about often is trying to lose weight, if that is your journey or decision or whatever the reason is,
trying to lose weight with PCOS can be very difficult, but that is often what people are told is just go out and lose weight. That seems to be the quote solution for everything, which we know is not true. But wow, so you advocated for yourself at your doctor's office and got this other appointment, then you're actually getting some answers, but then they're like, well, we can't support you. Oh, wow.
Exactly. Yeah. So I felt very defeated after that appointment. Yeah. I didn't have any motivation to seek out fertility specialists at that point. I just was pretty bummed out. And, you know, actually she did give me a prescription for metformin. So this is interesting. She said, lose 10% of your body weight. I'm going to write you a prescription for metformin, which is, my understanding is that it's typically a medication that patients with diabetes take. And there have been studies to show, or at least at this time, this was 5.5 years ago or so, she said that that sometimes that can help with conception if I wasn't ovulating. And so, so basically I left that appointment. I was feeling pretty bummed out. I had a prescription for metformin. And so I started taking that. And at this point it had been almost, we were almost at a year, at the 1 year mark from when we started not trying to have, to conceive. And then I got pregnant. So it's funny how that works. They always say when you're not thinking about it, but of course I was still thinking about it every day. It was still such a focus in our lives, but I was really just in between medical doctors and trying to figure out what I wanted to do for my own health and where I wanted to go. And so I never really closed the loop on that. I just got pregnant and we started our pregnancy journey from there. And I found some, at that point I was looking for, providers, knowing that I was pregnant and would be delivering and needed to kind of start thinking about what group I wanted to work with. And living in Seattle, I am really privileged to have a few different options of providers to see in the OB world and pregnancy. And there's midwives and lots of different options here.
Wonderful. Well, I love how you advocated for yourself and went, you know, above and beyond, but you got pregnant within that first year. And we don't normalize that's how long it can take the average couple without anything like PCOS or any other reasons why fertility might be harder to conceive. You know, it takes about a year on average for people to get pregnant, but we don't hear that. And there's so much pressure once you're, okay, I want to get pregnant, that you put on yourself and that society puts on you, that every month can be so stressful too, of testing. And, you know, so it's a lot, but I really love how you shared that you went above and beyond and yet still couldn't get the support that you really needed and wanted. And we're just like, well, here's this prescription. And did she tell you that it might, you know, make your stomach turn inside out and racing to the bathroom? And some people have those side effects from metformin that they're not informed about. And then they're just surprised and they're like pooping their pants.
Yeah. I don't think that she told me about that, but I definitely had started going down like a Reddit rabbit trail and saw, I think I saw the term volcano ass. And then at that point I like took the rest of the week off. I was from work. I was like, I'm starting a new medication. I'm not going to be at work dealing with this.
Yeah.
I think also it's really hard in that first year. So I think we actually ended up getting pregnant like maybe 12 months or 13 months, so almost exactly in that time frame. But what was confusing was I didn't know if I should be seeking out fertility at that point. I knew I probably had PCOS, but I was still within that 1 year time frame. And so there's not really anybody that makes that decision about who to talk to, like, do I seek out fertility treatments or help now, even though we're still within this first year of trying, but I know I have PCOS. And so I think that during this process, I really learned that the person who makes that decision is yourself.
And yes,
that was really enlightening for me, even as a 29-year-old going through that experience. I think.
Yeah, and empowering, yeah, too.
It
like,
is.
I'm going to make these extra appointments, and I'm going to, and I would say for anyone listening that's questioning what Alicia just said of like, okay, well, you know, how long do I wait? I would encourage anyone who is thinking about trying to conceive or in the process of trying to conceive to set up an appointment for a preconception visit. And that can be a lot that we can unpack. And we're here for Alicia's birth story, so I won't go into it too much. But connecting with a size-friendly care provider early on and during your trying to conceive journey to talk about your fertility, your overall wellness, your overall health. If you want to, with your partner, do some genetic screening. All of that stuff can be done early on, and then they can help support you along your journey to getting pregnant. The harsh reality of that is so often people are told what you were. So I think it's easy for me to say, hey, my advice is to go, you know, connect and with a care provider and have a preconception visit, because I think it can be really important. But I just know the reality that so many people don't get the support that they need. And that's why I have lots of resources, and I'll put some resources in the show notes here on this episode of how to even connect with a size-friendly care provider so you can feel like you're getting that, you know, evidence-based, compassionate, supportive care from the beginning. So that would be my advice to people. But like you said, if at any point you want more support or to look into, you know, fertility support, while you have also acknowledged there's privilege in being able to even access that, I do agree with you that whatever you feel that you need, you should go after, because no one knows your body better than you.
Yeah, I think that is so important, and it can be really hard to find a provider. I mean, I'm even still struggling with that right now, to find a new primary care provider that I feel listens to me and has that size friendly health at every size approach. But I think you have to trust it. You really, it can be so hard, but so impactful to trust yourself when making medical decisions, or even knowing the path to take and appointments to look into, or specialists that you may want to see and have a second opinion from. Yeah,
absolutely. And those who you don't want to see again.
Yes.
And then you're like, don't feel that you have to.
It's okay to break up with a doctor. I think that too has been, you know, it can be hard to do that and to then feel like you have to find somebody new. But ultimately I did do that. And this is a great segue, but I broke up with the medical provider group that I had been seeing initially. And when I was looking for a group to work with through my pregnancy, I ended up choosing a group of midwives that work in the hospital. That's part of our university hospital group. So I liked having the option to choose a group of providers that were in line with how I envisioned my birth ultimately going at the hospital.
I love that. We do love midwives here on the show. So how was that first prenatal visit for you when you are pregnant and you're going in and to confirm the pregnancy and all that exciting time?
Yeah. So I also feel like there's not anyone out there that tells you when you're supposed to make an appointment to go see the doctor when you're pregnant. So I got an at-home pregnancy test. We were super excited. I thought I was supposed to go in and get my pregnancy confirmed. Like, I thought the next step was that immediately I should go in and make an appointment and have them confirm that I was pregnant. And so I did that. And basically they just gave me an at-home pregnancy test in the doctor's office and told me to follow back up when I was about 10 weeks along. Yeah. So that was when I was still seeing the old providers group. And I knew that wasn't really, it just didn't feel right. And at that point I started asking questions about where the doctors at that medical group delivered, which hospital they delivered at. And I think that was good too, because you can see neighborhood. If your doctor works at a neighborhood clinic, for example, or your OB works at a neighborhood clinic, you won't be delivering your baby there. You usually have rights at a hospital. And so I was also trying to base my decision on where I wanted to deliver and what group I wanted to work with based on what hospital I wanted to be at.
I love it. Yeah. So smart.
Yeah. And I think I do have a bit, my mom was a childbirth educator while I was growing up. So I have, and I had been at a friend's home birth. I was born at home. My siblings were born at home. So I kind of come from this history of more of a like home birth style based culture.
Yeah. A more holistic approach to birth.
Yeah. And so if it was maybe all my, you know, I probably could have been more comfortable doing a home birth than my husband was at the time. And we landed on a really great option, which was this group of midwives that delivered at our local hospital. And so back to the original question, which was how those first visits went. My first visit with the midwives was around 10, I think between 10 and 12 weeks is when they want you to come in. And it was super exciting. I got to see, they had a little ultrasound machine in the room. So I got to see just like the bean. Here's what it kind of looked like at the time. And it was really surreal, especially just going through all of that process to get pregnant. And it just felt really exciting and it felt really real to see everything. Yeah. And I felt okay about the midwives group. I think there was a conversation at that first appointment about my BMI, which was, you know, looking back, I think there are things that I know now that would make me feel uncomfortable in a doctor's office now, but at the time I just didn't really know even kind of what my options were and and how to approach conversations with providers that were focused on my weight. And so, yeah, it is what it is, but it never feels good to leave an appointment with a printout appointment summary. And like the first thing at the very top is your name. And then like my BMI with an exclamation point next to it, because I was, you know, it must mean that it was high. So I think, that was challenging for me because I was really excited and everything looked really good, but I felt like there was still kind of this unsaid bias against my weight and how that could potentially impact things moving forward, even though everything looked great at that appointment. Right. So I think now, like I said, looking back, those may have been those would probably be red flags now that I wouldn't be as comfortable with, or maybe things that I would have addressed at the time with the midwife or with the providers, but it just kind of became part of what I expected at the appointment.
Yeah. I think there's that balance, right? Of there's certain conversations care providers are going to want to have around guidelines for pregnancy, on weight gain recommendations and increased risk. But it's how those conversations take place that are really, really important. And they can be done in a way that leaves you feeling like empowered, like everything looks great and healthy so far. Here's some things we just want to go over, or leave you feeling like, oh, I'm at, you know, this much higher risk, which isn't even exactly accurate. There are some increased risks. So paying attention to how those conversations unfold. And you want to walk away feeling really excited and empowered if that's where you're at with your pregnancy journey. And it's unfortunate that for so many people who are plus size, that's not how they end up leaving that first appointment very often. And I'm sorry you weren't feeling as, you know, like looking back now, you realize that it could have been done differently.
Yeah. Yeah. And even like I think even those unsaid things, it's the little indicator next to my BMI that was on the printout of my visit summary that, and maybe those things have changed and maybe they're working on that in the system, but it's, I never felt like it was my specific midwives that were making personal judgments against me or my weight. It felt more like I was working in this system that was set up to distrust my body.
Wow. Yeah, that's really powerful.
Yeah.
And I don't think much has changed.
No.
Unfortunately. but I'm glad that you felt supported by your actual providers. But yes, we have to work in a system that isn't designed to support women in general, let alone people in marginalized bodies.
Absolutely. So. Yeah. Yeah.
But on a happy note, like, how did things progress with your pregnancy?
Everything was really textbook normal, I think. Nice. You know, it was progressing great. I didn't have a ton of morning sickness. I felt really good and energized. I feel like, you know, I'm one of those pregnant people that everyone was like, oh, you didn't even get sick. But I was just really excited and everything.
I got to ask about clothes because had you already started plus size in Seattle?
Okay. Absolutely not.
But you weren't like into fashion as much.
No, not at all. I wasn't really excited about clothes. I was ordering a lot of stuff. I think I had just a couple of maternity pieces that I had found in store at Old Navy and then went back and they had discontinued carrying maternity clothes in store. And I was so mad because it was really hard for me to find clothes that I liked that were, I was going to fit in, that were stretchy. And so I lived in a lot of Target and Old Navy. I loved those, like, you know, and re-wore a lot of stuff that I had, like stretchy leggings. I wore a lot of my husband's clothes.
Nice. That works.
Yeah.
Whatever you wear that works for you. And also, like, you are plus size, but, you know, were you around an 18 or so with Carter's pregnancy?
I was a little bit smaller. I think I was around a size 16. So I was still kind of toggling in between, like, I could find some stuff in stores, but not really. Yeah.
But isn't that baffling that you're struggling to find stuff in a size 16, 18? Like, it just blows my mind that, like, this really shouldn't be that difficult. Like, you're just a little bit above the average size, you know? It's like,
it's ridiculous.
And also how things are marked on your pregnancy, too. So I love hearing from people in a range away of body sizes because we have this idea of what it is like to be plus size and pregnant. And I think people look at someone, you know, much larger, like maybe my body size, and make these assumptions. But it's really anyone who, you know, has a BMI over 30, which you did. And to have all of those struggles, it's incredibly frustrating for sure. But it's also like, you found fashion later in life and motherhood. And so, you know, through that time now during pregnancy, just figuring out what works. And there's nothing wrong with that whatsoever.
Yeah.
I was just curious if you were a fashionista during your pregnancy.
I wrote this, like, rage email to ThredUp at the time because they didn't have anything. They kept advertising as a great option for maternity clothes, but they had like one pair of pants over a size 14. And I was so mad. I was like, don't you think that fat people get pregnant too? And like,
yes!
I don't know. They probably just, like, I don't know. They were a new company or something, but
still, I'm glad you did. And it's good for us to speak up about those things because since then they have expanded their maternity selection. I think it goes to 3X. I'll check and I'll put it in the show notes, but it is hard. And it's so thanks. I wanted to pause and talk a little bit about fashion because I know that's something you love. As a certified childbirth educator specializing in plus size pregnancy for over a decade, I've become frustrated with how the information shared in popular pregnancy apps, websites, and magazines doesn't always align with having a plus-size pregnancy. So I've written an evidence-based, week-by-week plus-size pregnancy breakdown just for you. Head to plussizebirth.com to sign up for the plus-size pregnancy week-by-week breakdown series. Best of all, it's completely free. So go to plussizebirth.com today. Now, back to the show. So I have to ask, because we do know in your story you developed gestational diabetes. Did you get tested very early on in pregnancy to see if you were already pre-diabetic or diabetic? Because that's something that often happens when you have a BMI over 30.
I can't remember if they tested me super early or not. I feel like it was around the normal time, kind of right before my third trimester when I had my first 1 hour glucose test.
So closer to like the 24 to 28 week mark.
I think
so.
I think I was on more of the earlier side of the spectrum, but I might just be forgetting the details about that exactly. But yeah.
Oh, so you're fine.
I had the 1 hour test and I failed the test, which is, I think in general, there's just a lot of like morality tied up with gestational diabetes and like,
right.
Are you going to pass the test? And did you, or do you have to take the, you know, did you fail? I kept hearing like, oh, it's okay. My sister failed that one, but then she passed the 3 hour one. So you're going to be fine. Mm. And like, I felt like there was this narrative that was like, don't worry. You're not going to have it. Yeah, you were just so close with your first test. Like, don't worry. I'm sure you won't actually have it. But it's okay that I did have it. And I feel like it's not fair to have that lingering for anybody in their pregnancy, whether or not you have gestational diabetes or you don't have it. It just feels like there's an interesting moral thing that's caught up with the gestational diabetes diagnosis. And I think even more like when you have it and then insulin levels, and we can get more into that. That's just something I noticed.
Yes. And it's for people of all sizes, but especially when you exist in a larger body, it's like we seem to forget as a society that people of all sizes can get gestational diabetes and it's not a moral failing at any point. But then when you're plus size, it's just like this expectation that you will get it, which not everyone does. But even if you do, it's something that anyone can incur. And I have to ask, at any point, because of PCOS, were you told that you had, you know, there's a higher prevalence of gestational diabetes with people who have PCOS?
Yes. And okay. I'm pretty sure my midwives had told me that. They were really great about coaching me through the gestational diabetes diagnosis, right, and the process and the test. And then I think I had also done, of course, like a lot of Googling at that point. Yeah, I had read that the PCOS, and I think there are a couple other things that can be like risk factors, or, you know, maybe it doesn't always mean that you're going to have gestational diabetes. And I think after that first test, when I like had a high number, I was like, okay. And the 3 hour test, that's really just torture. You know, trying to, I already have like hard veins to draw blood from, but it's just not the whole process and getting the diagnosis for me was worse than dealing with the outcome, the result, and what I needed to do after I learned that I had it. I think that my midwives group does a great job of connecting their patients with a diabetes education nurse at the hospital. Mm-hmm. And then also with, I think, a nutritionist or a dietitian that I met with as part of that as well. And
yeah.
I was really scared about and like embarrassed about having to need those appointments. I felt, again, like really ashamed and that I had done something wrong going into those meetings. But that was one of the best, the coaching and the education and just support from the diabetes education nurse was really impactful. She was so understanding and just did such a good job explaining that it wasn't my fault and there's nothing wrong, you know, that it's not this isn't something that I did wrong, and really helped me understand the science behind what gestational diabetes is and helped me understand how to use my glucose monitor, how to record my blood sugars, and kind of coming up with ways to eat and create a diet that could help keep my insulin, or to help keep my blood sugar down, and with the end goal of hoping to be able to control blood sugars without needing insulin.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm glad that you share that, because I think you get this diagnosis and then people are like, oh, now I have to go to all these extra appointments and are they going to judge me and make me feel badly? But you had such a positive experience. So I hope people hear that and don't feel discouraged. But I also can only imagine for those of us who are plus size, and many of us have a history with disordered eating, being told that you have to, quote, diet. Like, I heard the pause when you said it, but yeah. Like, we have to eat in a certain way. But ultimately, you know, you have to manage your blood sugar. So it's something that you are doing for your overall wellness and health. This isn't restricting calories to fit into size 6 jeans. This is literally for your wellness and for your health. But can you talk about what that felt like to have to restrict certain foods and have that experience with food?
Yeah, it was really challenging. I think that at that point in my life, I had not really worked through some of, you know, the diet culture issues that are pretty deeply rooted inside of me and challenges I face with that. I saw it as a game, and I tried to think about it as a way that was just something I had to do that was one step closer to meeting my baby. And it was really challenging. I was really upset about, like, you know, I kind of lived off of carbs at that point in my pregnancy. All I wanted was like a bagel and cream cheese every day. And carbs are basically what they tell you you can't eat, and or you can eat carbs. There are just ways that you can structure your diet to keep your blood sugar low. And so carbohydrates, I learned so much about this stuff, but yeah, carbohydrates, including fruit, would be triggers for my blood sugar. And definitely social events or being out at, you know, different things where I felt like I had a restriction was just, it was hard and it sucked. And yeah. I love candy, and I know I love, yeah. Like, I remember being at a birthday party and they had this like whole like candy bar set out, and looking back, like, I probably could have had a piece of candy. I think I was so motivated to stay off of insulin because there was also a threat of getting bumped out of my midwife's group if I needed to go on insulin. And that's, you know,
yeah,
that's kind of hard there probably wouldn't have been anything I could have done at that point. It was just a product of, like, they couldn't have at that point, if I was a high risk pregnancy, I would have gone to see a different group of OBs. And, mm-hmm. and I don't know if I really would have been able to prevent that. I think maybe some of that is just the way my body was processing, and my blood sugar stayed within the range that was acceptable to stay at the midwives group.
But that's a lot of pressure. And so just for clarity for anyone listening, there are many people that can manage gestational diabetes with nutrition, as Alicia's explaining, but sometimes you do need insulin, and then there's more oversight. Some people can still work with midwives, but there are some programs where you would have to move to an obstetrical model of care and work with OBs and a maternal medicine specialist and just get some overall oversight for the overall health and wellness of you and your baby, which is the main objective to all of this. So, but yeah, that extra pressure of you didn't want to lose this group where you felt really great. I can only imagine how hard that must have been.
Yeah. It felt like a lot of pressure, but also if I would have needed insulin and had to work with that other group, it would have been okay too. I think
totally.
It just kind of gets back into that. Like, I felt like I was a good gestational diabetic because I didn't have to do that. I was able to control things with nutrition, but that doesn't mean that somebody else who needs insulin did a bad job. And so,
yes. You stated that beautifully and perfectly, and I think everyone gets that, and we need to break down these, you know, these labels that we place on people, but without negating how you felt in that moment, because that's important too. Absolutely. Yeah. You had this diagnosis, you know, getting closer to the end of pregnancy, you're managing your blood sugar. How's everything else going with your pregnancy?
Yeah, so that last little stretch when I was monitoring everything was also when my husband and I took an in-person childbirth class with Penny Simpkin, who is a really well-known doula. And my mom, like, from being a childbirth educator, was like, you need to look and see if Penny is teaching classes still in Seattle. And she was at the time. I don't know if she still is now, because she was, I think, in her 80s.
Yeah, she's not teaching anymore. I actually spoke at a conference with Penny. We were both speakers and just an incredible, incredible human based in the Seattle area. So what an amazing experience to have.
I think really fondly about those last couple of months, even though I was dealing with the gestational diabetes. And I remember, like, in the middle of our Penny class, I'd have to go and test my blood sugar and manage that. But we were just getting really excited and doing everything we could to prepare. I really wanted to have a childbirth where I could move around and go in the tub in the hospital. Like, I picked the hospital because they had bathtubs, and, like, I had this vision of wanting to have an unmedicated labor and have that ability to move around. And so I was really honed in on just reading and learning and listening to as many birth stories and looking at images of childbirth, either, like, on Instagram. I was just, like, obsessed with visualizing and getting this image of birth and preparing in that way, and feeling like that was what I could do I knew that childbirth is unpredictable, and that I could have a birth plan, but, you know, that could immediately go out the window as soon as labor started. And so I felt like I really tried to focus on just preparing for all of the different options and knowing what those options were, and just gathering kind of an arsenal of strength within myself and then with my partner to like go. And I felt like we were really ready to rock and roll when it started.
Oh, well, let's go. I'm okay, so excited. Yeah. Did you go into labor on your own?
I did. I know. I feel like I had listened to so many birth stories that I knew it was so rare to first go into labor on your own and, like, within your due date window.
How many weeks along were you?
I was 40 weeks and 2 days when I went into labor. So I was only, like, 2 days overdue, and I woke up in the middle of the night and I thought I had to poop, and I knew that I was in labor because I had listened to so many birth stories that people think that they have to go to the bathroom, but that could be also like a sign of labor starting. And it went really fast as well. So that was something that surprised me, because I thought I was going to have a 48-hour first labor. We called my mom right when we knew I was starting, because she was going to be there.
Had you at all considered hiring a doula because you wanted an unmedicated birth?
Yeah. So my mom was my doula.
Oh, I love it. Yeah. Oh, that's beautiful.
Yeah. And then we always joke that the nurses afterwards said my husband, Doug, could totally be a doula too. He was an amazing support.
So for anyone listening that doesn't know, a doula provides emotional, physical, and educational support, and we'll put resources in the show notes. But yes, your mother as a childbirth educator is, you know, also a perfect doula, and I love that your partner was too. Okay, so you let your mom know.
Yeah, I let my mom know.
How long were you laboring at home then?
I was laboring, I think we spent about, you know, time gets into be such a weird time doesn't really exist when you're in labor, but I labored at home for probably like 4 hours or so. And then my mom got there because she had to drive down. They live on an island. She had to, like, take a ferry and come over. She caught the first ferry. So of course everybody on the island knew that I was in labor because she was leaving. She drove down and, like, she walked in the door and was like, I think that we need to go to the hospital. And I think it was going so fast. And even Doug was surprised with how quickly it went. So Our hospital is only about a 5-minute drive from our house, which is great. And when I got there, I was 7 centimeters dilated.
Whoa. So, wow. That's not normally the norm when you show up at the hospital. Wow.
So I felt really good about like how I was feeling and my plan for trying to do my birth unmedicated and having the ability to walk around. And I had a really positive birthing experience at the hospital. I felt like my midwife was just so present with me. She stayed in the room for almost the entire time I was there.
Wow. Which that's not normal
also
either.
Also not normal. And part of the reason why I picked the hospital where we delivered was because it's small, it's smaller. And so I heard that that can sometimes, they just have less patients. And so she was there like rubbing on my back and it was really a beautiful experience.
Was there time for you to get into that tub you had been eyeing?
I didn't want to, not really. I didn't really feel like it too. It kind of, things were really intense. Pretty much once I got to the hospital, I was going through transition and then they started having some issues with the heart rate. The baby's heart rate was going down a little bit. I never really felt like there was a serious concern, but there definitely got to a point where I remember like they wanted me to push if I could push to like it was dipping low enough that the midwife was trying to help get me into positions to where the baby could turn and do different things towards the end. And I really feel like our work together, the midwife and me, like trying to get in different positions helped me achieve that empowering birth. And pushing was really hard. I think at that point I'd been in labor for about 8 hours or so, 10 hours maybe. From start to finish, it really wasn't very long.
That is so short. I know that might sound long for anyone who's trying to conceive, but that, especially for a first-time parent, that is we're looking at the average, I think, is closer to 24 hours. So this is really a short window. And I'm sure your brain is just trying to process all of this too, of like, oh my gosh, I'm about to have a baby.
Yeah. And I remember they're like, do you want some cranberry juice? And I'm like, I don't know. Can I have that? I have gestational diabetes. Like, I was like still trying so hard.
You're amazing.
I said it was just really wild. The pushing was really hard, but I felt like a warrior woman, like birthing him. It was a beautiful moment.
What position did you end up giving birth in?
I was pushing for a really long time on my hands and knees, which my mom, I was over 10 pounds when I was born. All of my siblings were like 9 or 10 pounds. And my mom always said like hands and knees is such a great position for big babies when it can help with your pelvic positioning. And so I was doing that for a really long time. And it like, all of a sudden I said I wanted to like turn over. And as soon as I flipped around, just on my, like the position that usually doesn't work very well, but I was just on my back and maybe on like my side kind of. And the midwife helped hold my leg up. And so he just kind of came out right after I flipped over. And he was big. He was 8 pounds, 15 ounces. But a beautiful, perfect baby with no blood sugar issues. Sometimes that can be a concern. So they had to do all these extra tests and make sure that his levels were okay because I had gestational diabetes, but it's amazing. I just have such a big smile on my face thinking about that moment because there is nothing that compares to putting the baby on your chest and all that hard work, really all that powerful. Hard work that I had done and I felt like I had advocated for. I felt like a superwoman for sure.
Aww. So beautiful. I'm so happy for you. And I love that you share that about the baby too. Why don't you share for anyone listening how they were monitoring you and the baby for those first like 24 to 48 hours for anyone who might have been recently diagnosed with gestational diabetes?
Yeah. You know, I don't even remember what they did for me. I feel like, I know that part of my education and learning about gestational diabetes, they explained that once you deliver the placenta, it's normally then your body is like back to normal and you don't have gestational diabetes anymore because it is, all in the placenta. And
okay. Did everyone hear that? It's the placenta's fault. It's not your, yeah. And it's not even the placenta's, but like, stop blaming yourself. It is really the placenta. And yes, there is an increased risk of developing diabetes down the road. But after you give birth, it's also like with HELLP syndrome, with really high blood pressure, giving birth is the cure to it. There's so much that happens to people of all sizes during pregnancy that is not within our control. Our bodies are growing humans and birthing humans. It is a huge toll that it takes on us. And then they monitor the baby's blood sugar, as you said.
So they came in, they had to do a couple of extra heel pokes for the baby and just, I think it was like every, they have a cadence with like every couple of hours that they had to come in and do that. Which is not my favorite thing in the middle of the night to have to have your baby poked in the heel or that those are never.
But Carter was fine, right?
But Carter was totally fine, and he was just a big boy.
You have a family history of having larger babies. Yeah. I wanted to ask because rewinding real briefly, a lot of people, especially plus size people, feel pressure about, oh, your baby's so big, we want to induce, or we know those ultrasounds near the end of pregnancy can be off about a pound in either direction. At any point, did your midwives make those comments, especially having gestational diabetes?
My midwives were really awesome about that in particular. And I asked a lot of questions and, because growing up with a mom who was a childbirth educator, like I heard this stuff all the time. And I was 10 pounds, 10 ounces when I was born and, and my nephew was like 11 pounds. No. And totally fine. We just make, we're just really,
you make big babies.
We're tall people too. We've like, I'm 5'8". And my midwives did such a wonderful job. They would ask me, like, sometimes they would ask me questions about how big I was and how big my mom's babies were, how big my sister's babies were. And they really were comfortable that they didn't, like, I think I was measuring big too. So every time I was consistently you know, they measure the location of your
Fundal height.
Yeah, the fundal. I was like, I can't remember that word. It's been so long. And I was always about 2 weeks over, which was probably,
but that was your tracks. My arms going up like in a circle like that. They're measuring how you're progressing, not necessarily that, you know, I always explain that when you go into pregnancy already having a belly, you're going to measure a little ahead. But what they're looking for is a consistent curve of growth for you.
Yes.
And that's so important too. Good. I'm glad you covered that because we hear people having so much pressure to induce. But, you know, we look at your whole story from the beginning of you advocating for yourself, you seeking out care providers that made you feel comfortable and good about your body, not only the care providers, but also the medical facility where you wanted to birth, which in turn led for this very individualized, beautiful experience where your midwife was with you the entire time. And you had this whole beautiful experience while having gestational diabetes and had a healthy outcome for you and your baby. This is a beautiful story and can be a very common narrative of having a plus size pregnancy with gestational diabetes, but it is not the story we hear very often. So I'm so honored that you brought it here to the show to share it because it's so, so important.
Thank you. Thank you so much. It's, thank you.
What would you say to someone, not even just someone who's possibly been diagnosed with gestational diabetes, but someone who is trying to conceive and who's really afraid of possibly incurring it?
Yeah, I just that it's going to be okay. And if you have it, that doesn't mean that you don't get to have the pregnancy and childbirth that you envisioned. it doesn't have to be the end result. And
yeah, and also knowing that meeting and those additional appointments and specialists, like, you felt that that was positive too. Do you look back on that first pregnancy and think, maybe I wish I wouldn't have been as restrictive and I would have had, like, you know, a few bites of a candy bar instead of not having any and then just hyper fixating on wanting that candy bar? Because we talk about that with, like, intuitive eating and listening to your body. And it's like, if you don't get what you want, then that's literally all that you'll focus on. And then you end up eating things that maybe in larger quantities that maybe don't make you feel as good. So I was just curious about that.
Yeah. I think just trusting yourself again, I think going back to that, like, you know yourself, if you can have a piece of cake at your baby shower, if you have gestational diabetes and it's not going to harm your baby if you do that. And that was something I was always so scared about, was the impact my food choices were having then on this baby growing inside of me. But as I had the support and the education from the medical providers, that helped me build that trust in myself. So I think that asking questions from your OB or your midwife or whoever you may be working with, if you have gestational diabetes, to find out and just learn more and remember that it's not something you're doing wrong.
I love that. Now, all this education and empowerment with your son, Carter, how did that play over to your pregnancy and birth with your daughter?
Yeah. So I didn't end up having gestational diabetes with my daughter. I felt like I just knew the path and the people I wanted to work with in that pregnancy. I had such a better understanding of how appointments worked and how to navigate the system. And I had a pretty uneventful pregnancy with my daughter. I had some postpartum. I had a piece of retained placenta and had to go back into the hospital. So there were some other kind of complications from her pregnancy, but that happened later on. And I felt like I had the tools in my tool belt to advocate for myself and make sure that, like, when I had to go back to the hospital with a 3-day-old baby, that she was there with me to nurse and stuff like that, that I maybe wouldn't have felt as comfortable with speaking up for myself had I not gone through all of that with Carter's birth and pregnancy and navigating PCOS. So I learned a lot, and it really set me up for success and to trust wholeheartedly in what I was going to do the second time around. And that birth was only like 3 hours long. So
wow. And how much did she weigh?
She weighed 9 pounds, 15 ounces.
I am a certified childbirth educator. My head's exploding right now. Like, to birth these big babies in such a short amount of time, like, your body is just so magnificent. Like, that is so incredible. But also, like, I'm also like, gosh, that was so fast. Like, your brain is still, like, not realizing what is happening as you're birthing a baby. So, but it just is another example that our bodies are all so different. Our babies are different sizes, and we all have these individualized experiences, and that birth should not be put into these little boxes and categories, that we need to be met where we're at and get the support that we need. And never once throughout the process, we need to feel ashamed. And sadly, it happens far too often. So to hear, you know, your experiences, I hope that people have these great takeaways of, you know, the really key for you is that advocating for yourself and where you wanted to be, and that there's, you know, you can't control partial retained placenta, which can become a true medical emergency, but you can advocate for what that experience might look like when you go back into a medical facility to get help that you need in that situation. Yeah. So, wow. Well, I'm like, woo, this is so, like, birth vibes everywhere. But tell us, before we go, I would love to hear more about your blog and your Instagram and your work with Plus Size in Seattle, which that is also your Instagram handle. So I hope people will be sure to give you a follow, because, you know, not only do you share, you know, about fashion, but you're a photographer and you're remodeling your home. And there's so much that you do that is so wonderful. So please, please share with us about Plus Size in Seattle.
Yeah. Yeah. Come follow along on my wild ride. I have two small kids and live in Seattle. I definitely have a newfound sense of myself in this new journey of motherhood. And it's been really fun to experiment with fashion in that way. And of course, my photography, I got a side photography hustle works really well with my blogging, stuff too. So that's fun. But you can follow me on Instagram at Plus Size in Seattle. I also have a website, www.plussizeinseattle.com. And those are probably Instagram's probably the best place to find me right now.
Well, great. I'll put everything in the show notes so people can click and connect with you over on plusmommy.com. Thank you again for sharing your journey with us, your experience, and encouraging people to advocate for themselves and hopefully helping to change the narrative around what it is like to have gestational diabetes during pregnancy and releasing some of that stigma. It is never, ever a moral failing. So, well, thank you so much, Alicia. And
thank
until
you.
Next time, bye, friends.
Bye.